Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder, your daily podcast of the top education headlines from across the web. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Susie.
Good morning, K-12 leaders. Welcome to the K-12 Breakdown with Brooks and Bronder. I'm your co-host, Susie Brooks, and joining me is Michael Bronder. Together, we explore the ever-evolving landscape of K-12 education. Stories we will explore today include how AI can benefit students with dyslexia, budget-friendly technology initiatives for districts, how a Native American public school is learning about decolonizing food pathways, and how you, too, can teach like a pirate. Michael, what are you seeing on our feed this morning?
Good morning, Susie, and it's great to be here. A lot came in over the wire last night, starting off this morning. We have more news about the devastating budget cuts that school districts are facing across the country. In this case, South Jersey superintendents are facing millions in state funding cuts, saying that they were in utter disbelief, said Carol Birnbaum. We thought that perhaps it maybe was a mistake, and when we double checked that it wasn't a mistake, our disbelief turned into shock and devastation. And that's a story that we're hearing straight across, you know, as we face the ESSER cliff and districts are faced with a real challenge ahead of them for this upcoming year. That perhaps is related to or not to the next story by district administration, and according to the Houston ISD report, they've hired, 839 uncertified teachers in the 23-24 school year. That includes those waivers include 727 teachers, 10 deans, and 54 assistant principals. You can read more about that at k12leaders.com/breakdown. Susie, there's an interesting one for you, perhaps, about AI and helping students with dyslexia.
Yep, right up my alley. I know we talked about dyslexia yesterday, in fact, so I thought I would share this one out as well. This one is focused, this one comes at us from K-12 Dive, and it is written by Lauren Barrick, and it is entitled AI Could Prove Helpful for Students with Dyslexia. With thoughtful experimentation, artificial intelligence can expand learning opportunities, an International Dyslexia Association leader says. Artificial intelligence is at a stage for thoughtful experimentation in assisting students with dyslexia, according to Josh Clark, head of school at Landmark School, a Pride's Crossing, Massachusetts private school serving students with dyslexia and other language-based disabilities. Clark noted, however, that while educators should explore how to bring AI tools into practice with students with dyslexia, they should not look at the technology as a bypass. It's an analogous, and I don't know if I said that right, into introducing dyslexic students to speech-to-text tools to help them with writing, and the tool fails them. It's not productive, said Clark. I do worry that we implement AI in unthoughtful ways. Clark, who also serves as a chair of the board for the International Dyslexia Association, said one immediate way AI can serve students is to help them access the content they may not otherwise be able to by turning the dial on linguistic complexity. For example, educators or students could enter high school concepts such as photosynthesis or Newton's laws of motion into AI tools like ChatGPT and ask it to explain the content, but at a lower reading level. That way, we can keep the essence and the complexity of the topic, even if I read it at a fourth grade level, Clark said. Their ability to then comprehend is likely much higher, better than their ability to decode unknown words. Clark knows that there may be a pushback today against using AI in classrooms, with worries including that it will reduce the quality of work produced. But he said guidelines and best practices are being developed and released, helping educators find ways to bring these tools into use with their pupils. It's incumbent upon teachers working with students who have dyslexia to try, as AI could afford these learners a way to create more authentic work, such as generating a mock-up of design or concept. that can demonstrate their understanding of a subject beyond a traditional 60-minute test or required essay, Clark said. Giving them the tools to apply their knowledge and produce and solve problems is right up in the wheelhouse of dyslexic kids, Clark said. And it's interesting. Yesterday, I was on an online conference, Text Help Leadership Assembly, and one of the sessions that I attended talked about how there are more individuals with dyslexia in the world than there are those with blue eyes, which kind of took me aback. So being able to support them and give them ways in which they can access content instead of just trying to fix them, I think is important. And at times I know that you've had to struggle through listening to me read. And since my stroke, it's affected my eyesight significantly with tracking and convergence. And then on top of it, some of the other shortfalls that I've had since having that stroke. And I know it's very different than dyslexia, but being able to listen to content instead of having to read content takes that struggle of reading away for me, and it allows me to just enjoy the content and instead of having to make my way through it at the same time as having to comprehend it. So it the difference is markedly different for me. So anything having to do with dyslexia now catches my eye because I can relate to it a lot more now than I did as a teacher.
Yeah, it's interesting, Susie, how much that that empathy, which was a conversation around our dinner table last night, the difference between sympathy and empathy. But it's striking how much of an impact that can have on teaching and teaching effectiveness. So, and some of that is just based on life experience. So thanks for sharing that. Also in the headlines this morning, an Arizona school is probing is under a fraud investigation as advocates dismiss a scheme as an inside job. You can read about that by Linda Jacobson on the 24th. But five people have been indicted in an Arizona school district, and there's a very good article on the 74 treating that. San Francisco algebra is on the ballot and has had overwhelming support to return to the eighth grade curriculum. So, congratulations to all of those eighth graders who are going to get their first taste of algebra in San Francisco. The word of the day today for the Learning Network and the New York Times is scrupulous. This word has appeared 30 in 36 articles on the New York Times in the past year. And the question that I would have is, how many times has the word unscrupulous shown up in a New York Times article in the last year? But scrupulous is the word of the day, keeping it positive. Let's see, is this another one on your list for today? District-wide tech transformation on a budget, Susie?
It is as we're making our way to the top. Yeah, I like to steal all the ones that we come to first. You know how I am. All right. So this one is coming at us from, where did it go? Oh, here it is. This one is coming at us from eSchool News, and it's written by Dr. April K. Vouse, and it's How to Direct a District-Wide Tech Transformation on a Budget. And it says a superintendent explains how she brought her classroom and teachers into the future without breaking the bank. Irvington Public Schools is an urban district with the hometown feeling of a place where everyone knows each other. Our student body is predominantly Black, but we are quite diverse and have many cultures represented among our students. Approximately 20% of our schools speak English as a second language. I have been with the district for 20 years, though I didn't become the superintendent until April 2020. When I came to the office, I had a tech-focused vision for the future of our district. But the pandemic was beginning to force us to move in that direction anyway, albeit without the careful consideration and planning we would have preferred. I gave our technology department marching orders to get every student and every teacher on a Chromebook and trained in the Google Suite within 2 weeks. It was immensely stressful for them, but they got it done and we haven't looked back. Here's how we brought our district into the future without breaking our budget. When I first became an administrator in the 2013-14 school year, I started a coding initiative. I believe technology would be powerful for our scholars, and I wanted everyone to have access to it. But only one student in the entire school signed up for the program. Fast forward 10 years, and now thousands of schools in our district are learning to code in elementary school using engaging hands-on tools like OzBots, Lego Spike, and VR labs. And that's just where their tech journeys begin. We also have Chromebooks for every student and 3D printers and interactive whiteboards in our classrooms. We even bought virtual reality headsets that allow our scholars to visit places that they might never see otherwise, a powerful way to bring cross-curricular learning to life for students. One thing I appreciate about the headlines is that they really highlight about the headsets, sorry, is that they really highlight the belief that technology does not have to exist in its own standalone class or even be the main point of any activity that it's used in. Sometimes it's just a way to excite students, to immerse them in a different perspective or experience than they might otherwise have access to. Our tech director, John Amberg, does an excellent job of staying on the cutting edge of technology and finding ways to share it with our students. Not only did he help launch our first STEAM Academy, he was instrumental in putting together our first AI Community Summit, and we are now preparing to open an AI Academy. In order to fund these exciting initiatives, we have been able to leverage state and federal funds, specifically ESSER funds, and have secured various grants. We can and will always hope for more funding. Regardless, our goal is to ensure that our schools are exposed to what's happening in the world, whether that's new AI tools or Elon Musk's new project. To that end, we have a department called Government Programs that seeks out and applies for grants, and we direct a certain amount of each school's funding towards technology. We spent time and resources to conduct research prior to making decisions, which has proven to be a sound investment. Part of that research is looking at what other districts do and reaching out to their leadership when I see something I admire. I am part of several different superintendents groups, and I belong to one core group in which we share everything we're doing so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. It can be hard to build these relationships with neighboring districts because everyone wants to stand out and be the best district in the area, but nearby superintendents can make incredible partners. We have our STEAM Academy right now because I had two phenomenal partners who let me visit their districts to see how their technology and systems worked. During any large technology adoption, it's important to partner with a vendor who has a human touch and can be consistently relied upon. They may be tech gurus, but if they don't understand your entry points and where you want to go from that point, or you can't reach to them when things aren't going well, it doesn't matter how great their technical understanding is. We partnered with Bloom to provide a range of technology, including OzBots, virtual reality headsets, 3D printers, interactive flat panels, Chromebooks, and more. It all works together to create a comfortable, user-friendly experience for both educators and students. The transition was hard for some educators because none of us wants to look like we don't know what we're doing in front of a classroom of young scholars. Some teachers also felt like we were telling them how to teach. I stress that the change wasn't about the technology, but about our scholars. We need to meet them at their entry points, and technology is a powerful entry point for our young people today. Another thing that has helped is reminding all of our teachers what a powerful and wonderful teachable moment it is when a teacher has the opportunity to show their scholars that everyone needs some help sometimes, and everyone, even students, can be in a position to teach from time to time. That's a valuable lesson for our scholars. We provided our teachers plenty of professional development on how to use all of these new tools to make their teaching more efficient, convenient, and engaging. I use that analogy of a dark room. No one has to go into it all alone. I'll hold your hand and go in with you, and I'll make sure you have support there in the form of technology coaches, technicians, and others who can provide one-on-one help. You may not be able to see everything around you, and you might feel afraid and vulnerable, but you have the support to stay safe and find a light switch. Through this work, we have made new technology non-threatening, which has been successful. We had teachers on the verge of retiring after 30 to 40 years in the classroom that caught a second wind amid all these transformations. It has made a difference in our school scholars' lives, too. One of our scholars recently achieved a perfect score on our mathematics statewide assessment. We asked her how she did it, and she told us that she was using the Chromebook and one of the programs we provided, iReady, to practice at home every night. She wouldn't have had that ability without our tech initiatives, but those tools and her own hard work enabled her to excel in an area that she doesn't even consider her best. As administrators, we can't be afraid to get out on a ledge. All that does is limit our scholars to what we already know and understand. We ask our students to be vulnerable and take risks every day. We can model that behavior by taking risks and learning to use new tools ourselves and relying on the partners and team members that we have to hold our hands in the dark. It's a great article.
That is a great article, and thanks for sharing that, Susie. I think it highlights how much great content there is on the internet, and how hard it is, for folks to like really drill down and find those stories that are interesting to them on a daily basis. So, just supporting the mission that we have here to, read news so other people don't have
Exactly.
to. But some great ideas in there for transforming your educational technology on a budget. Let's see, the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education in Louisiana has unanimously approved the Minimum Foundation Program for the 24-25 school year. You can find that link on the k12leaders.com/breakdown. And again, a lot of conversations here and concern about budgeting and funding for the upcoming year. And again, we can find those linked on our website. And I think, Susie, I'm going to dive into another eSchool article this morning, this one by Ben Brazzo. I will do a this is again, this is worth a deep read. And I'll encourage folks to find the link to this article, Five Ways to Teach Like a Pirate. And I'm going to do this in my pirate. I'm not
I
going
thought you might.
to. But arg, matey.
There you
So this is by Ben Brazzo of eSchool News. And you can find the link to this either by searching on eSchool News for Five Ways to Teach Like a Pirate, or on k12leaders.com/breakdown, and you'll see that story in our feed. Stimulating curiosity, fostering creativity, and promoting active participation can create dynamic and immersive learning environments. There is no surprise there. But learning is a dynamic process, one in which learners must be actively engaged. However, studies suggest that a significant percentage of students feel disengaged in their learning, posing a challenge for educators. This is again no surprise, as teachers strive to adapt their instructional methods to nurture student curiosity and drive deeper student engagement. The principles outlined in Teach Like a Pirate offer valuable insights. A few years ago, I read this book, Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess, and the ideas resonated with me. This is in Ben's voice, by the way, the article's author. In his book, Burgess emphasizes the importance of passion, immersion, rapport, ask, analyze, transform, and enthusiasm, which breaks down into pirate in teaching. Central to this approach are the hooks, strategies that captivate students' attention and foster excitement for learning. Here, we explore five effective hooks I've shared with the educators I support that are inspired by the book, along with specific examples of their implementation. The first is mystery. Creating a sense of intrigue and anticipation can significantly enhance student engagement. Simple yet effective strategies, such as presenting a mystery box or revealing half of an image, encourage students to speculate, discuss, and it. See what I did there? I created a mystery box, Susie.
I did. I noticed that.
Present students with half of an image and prompt them to speculate on the missing portion. For example, show only the right half of an image of soldiers and ask students to guess what the soldiers are preparing for. And there's an example here in the original article on eSchool News. You can find a link on k12leaders.com/breakdown. Technology. Technology can be a hook in itself, but it can also be combined with most of the other hooks to amplify the learning experience. Technology not only engages students, but also offers opportunities for alternative assessments that encourage creativity and individuality. By incorporating alternative assessment formats, for example, students can demonstrate their understanding in unique ways. And embracing alternative assessment methods not only fosters deeper engagement, but also unlocks students' creativity and individuality. Projects using platforms like Flip, GarageBand, Russell Tarr's Class Tools Fakebook Page, Matt Diller's Ditch That Textbook Templates, and Ryan O'Donnell's Creative EdTech site, excuse me, offer innovative ways for students to showcase their understanding while connecting to their interests. There are links to all of those resources on k12leaders.com/breakdown and on eSchool News. By harnessing these resources, educators empower students to demonstrate mastery, authenticity, fostering deeper engagement, and meaningful learning experiences. Another hook is the kinesthetic hook, and engaging students through movement is a powerful strategy that enhances active participation and deepens learning experiences. By incorporating kinesthetic hooks into teaching practices, educators can create dynamic and immersive environments that promote collaboration and critical thinking. And Susie, this harkens back to an article we read last week about dance and incorporating dance and music into the classroom, and a very powerful teacher that we highlighted down in Mississippi.
Yes,
And
with a documentary coming out in April.
that's right. And I wish one of us could remember the actual name or the link to the article. But
That's
I
your
will.
job.
But I'll find that and post that as a link here too. But yes, so by offering a multi-sensory approach, gallery walks, for instance, engage students on multiple levels, catering to diverse learning preferences and fostering a deeper connection with the content. As an educator who has transitioned from traditional presentations to gallery walks, this is Ben again. I have observed firsthand the transformative impact of this approach. It ignites greater student engagement and enthusiasm for learning, ultimately leading to more meaningful educational experiences. Fourth hook that Ben highlights here in his article on eSchool News is something he calls the safari hook, an example of which are scavenger hunts and interactive challenges, which offer exciting avenues for students to apply their knowledge while fostering independent learning and problem-solving skills. Using tools like Google Forms, educators can craft digital scavenger hunts with self-assessing questions, promoting engagement and autonomy in learning. This is actually an activity that our own Mr. Carl Hooker will often employ in the Tech and Learning monthly meetings by creating these scavenger hunts as one of the activities. Those are always fun.
They are.
But Ben continues as for instance, digital photo activities like the Alphabet Photo Book engage elementary students in identifying letters by capturing images around the school. This approach extends beyond traditional assessments, allowing educators to assess various skills and knowledge through student-generated content. And my aside is that there are a lot of technologies that are enabling this now as well. You have, platforms like Edsby, you have platforms like Seesaw, and others that will let you, take into account these sort of like non-traditional activities and still register them as part of the learning story.
Exactly.
And other activities like Breakout EDU provide a thrilling experience by presenting students with clues to open locks and reveal hidden treasures. Flippity.net offers flexibility in designing scavenger hunts, replacing physical locks with digital counterparts, and providing endless possibilities for creative challenges. And again, there are links to all of these platforms and tools on in the original article and on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And then the fifth hook that Ben addresses is the Picasso hook. Visual storytelling and sketchnoting are powerful tools for comprehension and creativity. With touchscreen devices and digital whiteboards, students can create visual representations of concepts enhancing understanding and fostering creativity. Sketchnoting allows students to capture information from text, video, or presentations using drawings, facilitating better retention and understanding through visual connections. Tools like QuickDraw by Google assist students in generating visual content by predicting drawings and offering clip art style options. Incorporating these hooks, Ben wraps up, incorporating these hooks into instructional practices not only revitalize classroom experiences, but also cultivates a deeper connection between students and learning. And by stimulating curiosity, fostering creativity, and promoting active participation, educators can create dynamic and immersive learning environments that inspire a lifelong love for learning. Susie, I really appreciate Ben's treatment of this. Again, you can find the original article on eSchool News and just search for 5 ways to teach like a pirate or on k12leaders.com/breakdown. I love that there is such a diversity of solutions included in this article, and I'd encourage you to take a look.
It's a veritable buffet of ideas for teachers to dive in. Yep. Think about what you want your students to know, understand, and be able to do, and then you look and see what tools fit right for you for your ideas. Great.
It's worth pointing out, Susie, that every teacher is responsible for maintaining student privacy, and before they, bring any student any tool into their classroom, they should check with IT, make sure that the application's on a safe list at the very least, and to make sure that that stays front and center in their minds. As we continue through the headlines, we have a story from Arizona State University, and it's encouraging use of AI rather than banning it. They've partnered with OpenAI, and you can read about that by Eric Ofgang at Tech and Learning. You can find a link either on Tech and Learning or k12leaders.com/breakdown. Let's see. There's a interesting. Oh, this is interesting. I'm going to leave this because we have one other article that we wanted to go in depth with. But Two Sigma Tutoring is separating science fiction from science fact. You can find that link on Education Next, and the link is here on k12leaders.com/breakdown. And let's see. We're talking about. Governor's priorities for education. We are in that time of year for sure. High absenteeism among disabled students in Minneapolis. A lot of great data here. Since the start of the pandemic, the number of students with disabilities who are chronically absent from Minneapolis schools has doubled, or nearly doubled, in more than a third of schools. That's by Beth Hawkins from the 74. You can either find that at the74.org or on k12leaders.com/breakdown. Barbie dollhouses and field trips led Lauren Matheson to become an architect. So interesting article on the conversation. Women are underrepresented in architecture, occupying just 25% of jobs in the field. And we have a link to that article on k12leaders.com/breakdown.
I missed that one. I'll have to go back and check it
Right.
out.
Susie, what else are you seeing here?
You got the best ones. You missed, there were a lot in here about misappropriated funds or people spending money that they shouldn't. There's a plethora of those today. The only other one that jumped out to me was the dual language education is one step closer to becoming a Washington law. And that one's coming at you out of the Seattle Times on district administration. The legislature plans to annually fund at least 10 new dual language education programs with the average grant award of $40,000. They'll help with programs, startup costs, support professional development of teachers, and provide for instructional materials in the second language being taught. So that's an interesting story that's on our on our list as well today on k12leaders.com/breakdown. But I know you have a great story to share coming out of the Northwest as well, I believe,
Well,
right?
yeah, it's breadbasket, and this is about decolonizing food ways, and originally published in The Guardian this morning. Hey, I Grew That, the Native American school that's decolonizing food ways. This is originally published by The Guardian, and we have both the link and this summary of the article on k12leaders.com/breakdown. At the Native American Community Academy in Albuquerque, New Mexico, food is much more than just nourishment. It's a way to reconnect students with their indigenous roots and decolonize their diets and foodways from the impacts of colonialism and forced assimilation. The school, which serves students from over 100 different tribal nations, has made it a mission to serve traditional native foods like blue corn, squash, beans, and chile in the cafeteria. The meals are a stark contrast to the processed industrialized foods that have become prevalent on reservations. Susie, it's worth pointing out that a number of the conversations I've had sort of offline through K-12 leaders over the past few weeks have been around farm to school programs in Colorado, in New Hampshire, in New York State. Really fascinating. And we no doubt will do a feature on that in the next several weeks. But this is just one more example of how important food and nutrition is within a school environment. In this case, it
Absolutely.
goes a bit deeper. So, nutritionist Amita Sanchez, who is Owingo Pueblo, and I apologize, I am working on my pronunciation. Says reclaiming ancestral foods is key to addressing the health disparities facing Native communities. Rates of diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and other diet-related illnesses are disproportionately high among Native populations. But for the educators at NAACA, it's about much more than just nutrition. Language teacher Jeremy Wahoraka So, who is Navajo, emphasizes the cultural and spiritual importance of these foods and foodways that were nearly lost due to centuries of forced assimilation policies aimed at stripping natives of their identities. Students spend classroom time learning about the history and traditions around food like corn, a sacred crop central to many indigenous cultures, in the school's gardens. They get hands-on experience growing traditional crops like the Three Sisters, corns, beans, and squash. They also take field trips into forests of the nearby Sandia Mountains and high desert to harvest foods like chola buds, pinyon nuts, and lamb's quarter greens, the same places their ancestors hunted and gathered for centuries before their lands were stolen. Back in the cafeteria, the staff works hard to incorporate these foraged and gardened ingredients into tasty and nutritious meals like blue corn mutton stew, squash empanadas, and salads with fresh wildlings. That's a great word. It's an effort to make healthier native foods appealing to young palates. For students like 15-year-old Esther Garcia, who is Pueblo, learning to grow and prepare these ancestral foods is deeply empowering and has given her a newfound pride in her heritage. As she puts it, this food is who we are. Decolonizing diets is just a small but vital part of the broader mission at NAACA to revitalize Native languages, cultures, and traditions after generations of violent suppression. By reclaiming their ancestral foodways, they are nourishing bodies, souls, and communities, planting seeds for a healthier and more resilient future. At the Native American Community Academy, food is far more than just what is served at mealtime. It's a powerful vehicle for cultural revitalization, decolonization, health, and healing in indigenous communities. So that's just a treatment of the article. The whole article itself goes into much more detail, it was really it's worth a read. So I'd encourage you to find that on theguardian.com. The link is on k12leaders.com/breakdown.
That's a great share, and I definitely worth a deeper dive. I agree. It's a great way for kids to be able to connect with their heritage and combat food insecurity. I'm glad that you highlighted that one today, and you can see it at the top of our feed when you visit k12leaders.com/breakdown.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. And thanks to all of our listeners this morning. I think that about wraps us up. Ms. Brooks and Mike Bronder, wishing you a great day at school. We will see you again tomorrow on The Breakdown.
Have a great day.